come on in.
And now, back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
The kids love him.
And your host,
welcome to paradise,
Bill Frank.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show. I'm your host, Bill Frank. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business and politics. As we get closer to the election, these two subjects dominate the conversation. My next guest is a rock and roll legend for his work with two supergroups of the 60s and 70s. Today, he's migrated into radio on Canadian Broadcasting Corporation and has his own show, which features the music he's so passionate about. We'll discuss his latest book, Vinyl Tap Stories, Stories That Rock from a Guitar Legend. Randy Bachman is legendary in the rock and roll world for his talents as a guitarist, a songwriter, a performer, and a producer. Best known for his work in the Guess Who and Bachman Turner Overdrive, get this, he's earned more than 120 gold and platinum albums or single awards from around the world for his performing and his producing. Randy's written the rock classics such as You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet, These Eyes, American Woman, Taking Care of Business, and No Sugar Tonight. Randy and Guess Who bandmate Burton Cummings are considered Canada's finest songwriting partners. Randy has a show of his own titled Vinyl Tap on CBC and Sirius Satellite Radio. Joining us on the phone today. Hi, Randy. How are you today?
Hi, Bill. Great intro. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for all the years of wonderful music that you have provided us. I hate to say this because it really ages both of us, but your career has spanned over 45 years. I mean, your real fans will know that you first came to prominence with their song in 1965, Shaken All Over, and then There was kind of a gap before your next really big hit. But by the time 1970 rolled around, the Guess Who had sold more records than the entire Canadian broadcasting industry to that point, even outselling the Beatles that year. But I wanted to ask you this. After 1965, when you had the success with Shaking All Over, did you think that you'd had all the success that you and the band were going to have at that point?
Well, that was enough at that point. But when we got home after that summer, we toured the summer of 65 with the Kingsmen. It was the Kingsmen Louie Louie tour, and it was just phenomenal. And we had the one hit, Shaken All Over, so we played it like 15 minutes. And the Kingsmen would play about in an hour. They had, you know, Jolly Green Giant and Little Latin Loop-De-Loo and stuff. And it was just a lot of fun. And when I got home, my dad said, well, son, what have you got to show for your summer away from home when you could have had a real job? And I said, I got a new guitar and $40. Isn't that great, Dad? And there was this dead silence. And he and I knew at that moment that this is what I wanted to do. I thought $40 and a new guitar was fabulous.
But looking back on it,
our lead singer went back to school because we were all in high school. Our lead singer went to college because he had just finished grade 12. He went to college, University of Manitoba, and we were stuck without a lead singer. And I went to the next band in town, which were called the Deverons, and their lead singer was Burton Cummings, and asked them to join the Guess Who. And he did, and then he and I started writing in 1967 or 68 with a dream of writing like Lennon and McCartney or Jagger and Richards or Brian Wilson, or, you know, the great rock and roll writers at that time. And he and I had a string that was, we ka-chinged on a couple of songs and did very well.
Well, that is a mild understatement, ka-chinging on a couple of songs. So what sustained you and the Guess Who during that period? I mean, was it you just driving for the musical thrill of it, or did you realize that greater things were on the horizon?
No, it was quite bleak for many, many years in there, and you just go by playing whatever gig you could get, a fashion show, a bar mitzvah, on a riverboat, a family picnic, high schools, churches, you know, where they had dances, community centers, things like that. You just played for $10 or $100, whatever you can get, chasing this dream, but meanwhile getting better and better and better, because there's also, in Winnipeg at that time, 150 bands all chasing the same dream. Neil Young and the Squires, the Deverons, the Guess Who, everyone chasing that dream. And if you're a little bit better, you got more of the dream. So those of us who had musical training, and I did on violin, I started when I was 5, playing classical violin, and you get in with a guy like Burton Cummings, who started playing piano when he was 6, and he's got grade 10 classical piano, and when you're teenagers and other guys are learning their instruments, and we already know music because we've been practicing an hour a day all of our life since we were 5 or 6, we have the discipline, as we understand melody and harmony and chords and counterpoint, we start a band, it's just a momentary, let's get together, and suddenly we go, wow, this is amazing. It was amazing the minute we first played together. We had all copied records and learned how to play rock and roll together by playing to records, and suddenly to get together, and I would play the guitar part perfect from the record, and Burton would play the piano part, and Gary Peterson would play the drum part, and Jim played the bass, and we each played our part, and together we sounded like the records. The next trick was, let's write our own music and sound like the sound like our own record, and we managed to pull that off.
Well, that you did. My guest is Randy Bachman, author of the book Vinyl Tap Stories. You mentioned earlier on that there are a lot of bands chasing the same dream, and you threw out the name Neil Young, with whom you're good friends over the years. Neil and actually achieved success, I think, a little earlier than you did with the Buffalo Springfield, and they were having a great run of success. I think it was in 1967 and 68. How did Neil and the Buffalo Springfield influence your music at the Guess Who?
Well, we left in 65. We left when they did that Kingsman tour. Shaken All Over was a top 20 song in Billboard number one in Canada. And we came back, Neil came to me at a radio station where we used to hang out and said, what's it like? And I said, you got to get out of town. They love us when you get out of town. You're really good. Go out of town. So he went to Thunder Bay and did a few gigs, and then he drove down to L.A. and met Stephen Stills and started Buffalo Springfield. But he'd always come home, and his mom still lived in Winnipeg, and he would play me an acetate of Buffalo Springfield. And Burton Cummings and I, all we want to do is play music like Neil and the Buffalo Springfield, like great, great country rock. And we managed to do that with one of our songs, No Time, and that was a very Buffalo Springfield-influenced song with a Stephen Stills guitar lick that I took and turned upside down. And when Neil heard that, he put my name on the back of Buffalo Springfield again. His second album is kind of a little thank you to me. And when we went to England to record in 67, we ran out of songs. We were the first band to record a Neil Young song, Flying on the Ground is Wrong. So he was thrilled at that, and then I went to see him a couple of years later in L.A., and he was just joining Crosby, Stills, and Nash and holding out to get his name in the title because they just wanted him as the sideman. So, and then, you know, I did a couple of songs with Neil called Prairie Town. You could Google Prairie Town. You see me and Neil Young playing and singing together two versions of this song, and he and I connect every couple of years and do something together, and he's one of my oldest friends from that era in Winnipeg when I was 15-ish, and he was 13 when he just moved into town.
Wow, that is great. My guest is Randy Bachman. So, Randy, let's talk about your early life in Winnipeg, if we can, for just a minute. You announced at a very early age you wanted to be a musician. You've already mentioned that you were classically trained on the violin. I shudder to think what taking care of business would sound like on the violin, but that's another discussion for another time.
I shudder as well, so I share your shudder.
But a precursor of things to come, in your book you said that radio was very important. It was your lifeline to the world outside of Winnipeg. Out where you live on Winnipeg is very flat. You could get radio stations from all across North America. In what ways did this fuel your interest in the different types of music, and how did it change your tastes in music?
Well, Winnipeg was a lot like Chicago. The railroads went through it. It was a stockyard, and it was a farm town, so grain came through and cattle and everything else. And so it was kind of country music, country western music, they called it in that day and age. And so all the radio stations were either, you know, Frank Sinatra, McGuire Sisters, Patti Page, or this country western music. But at night, with this little rocket radio that didn't even have a speaker, it had a little earphone you stuck in your ear, and you could put it on your pillow and lay down. Your parents didn't know you were listening to it. My aunt gave me this. My parents didn't even know I had one. And it went under your bed, and then you plugged it into the wall. It had no speakers, nothing, no knobs. You just pulled the nose of the rocket out, and somehow you would get a radio station or some sort of oscillator, and you'd listen to this music. So Winnipeg, being the top of the Great Plains and being very flat and AM radio, you know, which signal bounces off the clouds, I could listen to at night WLS in Chicago, WNOE in New Orleans, Shreveport, Louisiana. The odd night I'd get Wolfman Jack from some XRZ station in Mexico or something, and hear this, and Alan Freed from Philadelphia, and get this incredible music that was not on the radio in Winnipeg. And I was dying to play this. I'd go to every movie, the Bill Haley Rock Around the Clock movies and things like that. The Elvis movies, Jealous, the Beatles, Hard Day's Night, these were like templates of how to play in a band and what happened to you in a band, or what the fans were to do in a band with them when a band, when you were popular, things like that. So I started living and breathing rock and roll at that time.
My guest is Randy Bachman, author of the book Vinyl Tap Stories. Randy, what I really liked about your book is it's filled with all of these anecdotes that you're giving us right now. I want to get some specifics, though, if I can, from you. And I want to start with the song Taking Care of Business. Tell us the story behind this Fidel Castro look-alike pizza delivery boy that made his impression on that record.
Well, the song started many years before that, in I guess, 68 or something, when I was trying to copy the Beatles song, Paperback Writer. And I wrote a song called White Collar Worker. It was about our engineer in New York who wore a white collar shirt. And I went to see him come to work in the morning. And everyone else was wearing white collar shirts. And he took the 8:15 into the city. And I wrote about all the girls trying to look pretty and all that stuff. and the song being called White Collar Worker, I stopped in the middle and I did a thing like paperback writer, paperback, just like the Beatles thing, except mine went White Collar Worker, and everybody hated the song because of the similarity in the chorus to the Beatles. But I liked the verses. They get up in the morning from the alarm clock's warning, take the 8:50 into the city. And I held on to those verses until many, many years later. I was with BTO. We're playing 6 nights a week, 5 one-hour sets a night. And Saturday night, Fred Turner lost his voice and told me I had to sing the last set on a Saturday night. I didn't really have any songs to sing. I wasn't prepared. Having a great singer like Burton Cummings in the Guess Who and Fred Turner in BTO, I didn't need to sing a whole lot. I sang harmonies or shouted it on the chorus. Suddenly I had to sing lead. So I pull out Oye Como Va, the Santana song. It gets people up dancing. And as I'm doing the solo, I'm thinking, what are you going to do next? Now that they're up dancing, you've got to keep them dancing. And this light comes on in my head. This is your chance for White Collar Worker. And on the way to the gig that night, I heard a DJ on the radio say, this is Daryl B. on C-Fun Radio, and we're taking care of business. And I thought, what a great song title. So right there on stage, I put these two things together in my head, and we end Oye Como Va, and I say to the band, here's three chords. Follow this one. They get to the hook, singing with me. They go, what? And I start the song. I get to the chorus. Instead of stopping and doing White Collar Worker, I just throw that away and I go in, taking care of business, taking care. And the band sings it with me the next time. The audience starts singing it. We went to record it 2 weeks later. As we're listening to the playback, it sounds pretty good. It's only a relief song. We have no idea it's going to be a single. It's a relief song so Fred Turner can have a break on stage. He's not singing every song. And there's a knock at the door of our studio. I open the door, and there's a guy there in an army fatigue suit, an army fatigue hat, and he's got a big frizzy beard and frizzy hair, and he's standing there with a couple of pizzas. And he said, did you order the pizzas? And I say, no, go down the hall. And Steve Miller was down the hall doing his Fly Like an Eagle album, and War was doing their Why Can't We Be Friends album. So he went and got rid of the pizza. He comes back and knocks on our door again. We're putting on our coats. It's about 2 in the morning to go home, and he says, that song sounds like you could really use a piano. I'm a piano player. Will you give me a shot? And I figured, who am I not to give a guy a shot? So I say, okay, we don't have a whole lot of time. Let's throw a mic in a piano, play a little bit of Elton John, Dr. John, Little Richard, and we'll listen to it tomorrow. He did that. He left. He went on more pizza deliveries. We went to our hotel, came to the studio the next morning. The head of our label flew in to hear the album. He had told me to do more radio top 40 songs because the first BTO album was all 4 and 5 minute long, double guitar solo, FM cuts, and he wanted, you know, more top 40 stuff. So I came in to hear the album, and I told the engineer, I said, when you play back Taking Care of Business, don't play the piano track because we hadn't even heard it back yet. So he plays it, but halfway through it, he pushes up the piano. The head of our label, his name was Charlie Fatch, he jumps up and he goes, wow, that's amazing, BTO with the piano. That'll get you on the radio. That's like an Elton John thing, and Elton John's all over the radio right now. And all you guys that are 2 guitars, bass, and drums, you can't get on Top 40 Radio. This will get you on the radio.
My guest is Randy Bachman, author of the book Vinyl Tap Stories. And Randy, just from that last example, it shows that serendipity, the guy walking in with a pizza delivery, the fact that your lead singer lost his voice and you had to step up and start singing, serendipity has been a big part of both your life and career. What role has that played in both your life and in your career?
It's played probably the biggest role. And if you talk to people who are psychic or have some sort of gift of prophecy, or I guess other creative people, it gets to a point in your life where you stop trying to conjure up creations and you just treat yourself as a vehicle and relax and let it come to you and let these things happen that you eventually realize are supposed to happen. And if you relax and let them happen, they are amazing. And I look back at my life and my career and read this book and look at some of the documentaries on myself, and it seems like some really, really great script writers conjured this all up and wrote it out, except it's still happening right now. I'm talking to you right now. I'm touring next month. I'm touring next year. I got the book out. The Will Ferrell movie's out. There's things happening that just happen on their own, and it's a lot of happenstance and serendipity, like you said, and I'm just relaxing and enjoying the ride.
Well, and what a ride it has been. My guest is Randy Bachman. So, Randy, you just mentioned the film. You can add now to your list of accomplishments, film star. You're starring in the just-released film, The Campaign, with, get this, Will Ferrell and Jack Galifianakis. What is your role, and how did you land the role?
Well, it's not great casting, but the role is just me, right? Will Ferrell is running as a presidential candidate against Zach Galifianakis, and they're fighting against each other, and when Will Ferrell wins, his campaign song is Taking Care of Business. So we got invited down to be there as his campaign band play on stage. And when he wins the nomination of his party at the end of the movie, he comes on stage with a keyboard and plays TCB with us. And so I wasn't really acting. I was acting as me, which was kind of easy. And Turner was acting as Turner. But it was a great thrill to meet Will Ferrell because he is, in fact, the greatest politician of all time with all the skits he's done on Saturday Night Live. And the movie is so real. It's almost like what's going to happen with the debate, you know, and the debates on the ongoing debates with Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, and him and Zach debating are the exact same thing. They make the same promises that the presidential hopefuls are making, and they have the same excuses and shoot the same arrows at each other. And the movie's in the top 10 and probably will be till way past the election because it's such a cookie-cutter stamp of what's going on right now in the media on CNN and everything else. Will Ferrell and Zach are two really great modern-day comedians.
That they are. The movie is The Campaign. I've been speaking with Randy Bachman, author of the new book, Vinyl Tap Stories. A great read if you like rock and roll, a great read if you're interested at all in the Guess Who and Bachman Turner Overdrive. Randy, if you've piqued the interest of some of my listeners, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
RandyBachman.com. They want to get the book, go to Amazon, Google that, or just Google Randy Bachman. Randy's Vinyl Tap is my radio show. It's the title of the book. My email is randy@cbc.ca. That's my radio show in Canada. Emails will get to me there. And I appreciate talking to you and look forward to hearing from any of the fans out there. And I thank you and your fans everywhere for a great ride in rock and roll and for buying the records and coming out to the shows. And the ride continues.
And that it does. My guest has been Randy Bachman. Randy, thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, Bill. Bye-bye.
Bye now.